Yeah, something a little different here. It's kind of a potpourri of different wetland talks, and I think it's kind of cool. I'll just mention my co-authors are all folks with me at the National Lab for Ag and Environment, with the exception of Dr. Gelder, who's at Iowa State there. So across the Midwest, we've got areas of tile-drained land. They have fairly large nitrate losses, but are important for agricultural production in the Midwest across the Corn Belt. These nitrate losses that occur are significant contributors to Gulf of Mexico hypoxia. The EPA's task force that's looked at this has recommended that these nitrate losses need to be reduced by 45% in order to control the problem of hypoxia. So how are we going to get there? There's no silver bullet. We're going to need a whole range of practices that are out there. But certainly wetlands are one of those practices. If we can position those below these tile drain landscapes where we can denitrify and recycle those nutrients. So where can we put these wetlands? How do we identify sites that might be effective to remove these nutrients on the landscape? It's good to know this, to be able to get landowner participation, to recruit landowners into wetland programs, and also to scope out management strategies like nutrient trading scenarios and that sort of thing. We're here to in this talk to show how LIDAR topographic data might be a tool that we could use to actually begin to site some of these nutrient removal wetlands and some other practices as well that are out there that can help us remove nitrates that are being lost from these tile drain lands. You may not be familiar with LIDAR, so here's just a slide showing. We've got an aircraft with a push broom sensor. It's sending laser beams down to the landscape and getting return signals on that. And you basically can take the return data and generate a 1 meter digital elevation model. So here's an example from central Iowa. You can see the detail that you can get off of some of this imagery and just let you appreciate some of the artistry and of our GIS staff there. You can see, this is a river valley. You can see all the old channels. So quite a bit of detail there, fence lines, tillage directions, and everything. We're looking at using this information for conservation planning. And under a different a range of different scales and types of practices that we might look at. There are folks looking at clipping out individual fields to look at in-field erosion control practices that we might implement out there. And there's a couple examples there under that first bullet. But then also as you scale up, looking at the edge of the field, riparian zones, wetlands, and all the way up to river restoration projects, we feel that LIDAR can be useful to help us target some of these efforts at conservation. So bring you back to our tile drain landscapes here. These are some of the practices I'm going to be focusing on here, in particular nutrient interception wetlands up here. And you can see it's just a low impoundment, ponds up some water, but does not back the water up. You can see up on the landscape there that we can still put in crop production. We have not impeded the drainage, and that's from these croplands up here. And that's an important concept in terms of where we can put these. We put the impoundment in without damming up or impeding the drainage from the bulk of the cropland. Here's a two-stage ditch is another example. That's just kind of peeling the banks of this trapezoidal ditch back to allow the normal flow to take a little bit of meander across the bottom of a widened ditch, and gives you a little bit of riparian function in the bottom. And these can provide quite a bit of habitat and nutrient removal. So there's some other options out there. We're looking at wood chip bioreactors. It's a good practice. It's very effective. It's got some disadvantages. The one I'll mention is that you can only treat about 30 to 60 acres at a time through this, and you can, you know, obviously you can get quite a few more acres with treated through these other practices, not to mention things like ecosystem services would come in with these other two. So let's look at the site the watershed we're going to talk about here. We're in north central Illinois, Big Bureau Creek. This is a watershed that's in the Mississippi Basin River Initiative of NRCS. Won't give you any programmatic details on that, but just for your information, this is an MRBI watershed. And we're looking at Lime Creek there. It's a HUC 12 watershed, about 16,000 acres. We zoom in on that. We acquired this LIDAR data in March 2009, and you can see some of the detail that we've got there. And we've done some of the terrain analysis on there to identify the ditches and the flow paths and such coming off of that landscape. So if you're looking at this, what might we put in wetlands and a practice like two-stage ditches on this landscape? Okay. What we did, we borrowed some of the criteria from the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program from Iowa. Essentially, if you look at some of these ditches, what you need to do is put in a low impoundment, so you dam up the ditch, but then you also increase the height of that impoundment by another 3 feet or 0.9 meters there. But as you do that, some of the area around that wetland that you've impounded, you're going to impede the drainage around that as well. So we're going to add another 5 feet, 1.5 meters, of vertical buffer around that wetland. And we can use that for habitat. You can think of it as a buffer zone around the wetland, habitat, or you could put in perennial crops in there as well. And the criteria we also applied. We don't want this wetland or buffer to impede drainage around a road. The infrastructure is very important out there, or within or around farmsteads. If you can't go out there and recruit producers to put in some of these practices and say, oh, yes, we're going to have to close this road, or this guy's going to have to move out of that house or something like that. This is just you've got to pick sites that don't interrupt the infrastructure we've got out there. So we looked at sites immediately above road crossing to minimize the chance of impeding drainage to the next upstream road crossing, and checked each of those for the contributing area and the areas of wetland and buffer that we might get. After we selected some sites, we did a field review to confirm that these sites might make appropriate wetland areas, and then came up with a way of ranking the sites. The larger the contributing area, the more efficient you'll be in terms of using your program dollars to get the nutrient removal. But if you've got large wetland areas above 1 or 2% of the contributing area, you might be diluting your efforts there a little bit as well. And of course, you want the buffer areas around there to be reasonably small as well. So once we did that, went through that process, these are the sites that we came up with. And you can see there's about 12 different wetlands there. And they're not along all of the different tributaries that come down through that watershed, but we cover quite a few of them, zooming in on there. And so we identified, after the field review, 11 potential sites that could intercept drainage from about 30% of the watershed area. These wetlands occupied about 39 hectares. That's about 2%, but if you only looked at the lowest wetland along each tributary, that was about 25 hectares, so just over 1% of the contributing area. And we're definitely looking to try and get these in the 1 to 2% of the area. And if you look at the buffers there as well, you've got around 6%, 4 to 6% taken up with the wetlands and the buffers. And then there's a ranking system here, basically according to the size of the wetland area, but there's some docking. We use this as a score, if you will, and then docks if that score a little bit. If the wetland doesn't fall in that 1 to 2% range, or if the buffer area is way too large. Okay, two-stage ditches. So this is a ditch that we've got out in the watershed. This is a practice. You've got to come in and remove some material, widen the bottom of that ditch. You're basically going to leave this in place and allow that little meander that occurs through there to be maintained after you do that. So you're going to be moving some material off these banks. And, you know, the higher that this bank is, the harder that's going to be, the more expensive that's going to be. And so we just decided we would look at just 1 to 2 meter bank heights, and the LIDAR can tell us what these bank heights are quite accurately. And we would use this then for screening. And we'd actually need to do some survey data across there to do the final design on these. And so we looked through that, and these are the areas of those ditches where we have 1 to 2 meter banks along there. It adds up to about 22 kilometers of drainage ditches, and if it's a 3 meter width across there, you could essentially add 4.5 hectares of essentially wetland function to this watershed. So you add those two together, and you can see that most of these drainages, you can get one of these practices installed in there. So we've got zone up in the middle of the watershed where we can put most of these practices, but down here you can see we've got areas where it doesn't look like either of these practices are appropriate, and these might be areas where we'd look at alternative practices like the wood chip bioreactor, something like that. So this gives you a way of targeting these practices, but then thinking about where we might put some of those other practices that can only be used in fairly small areas. One of the things you got to think about when you put in these wetlands is how long they're going to be in place. What sort of practices might you need to keep these things from filling in with sediment, for example? And certainly erosion control is important with that in the contributing areas upslope. And the LIDAR can help you look at that as well. We've got a glacial moraine coming across here at the top of the watershed. And so these wetlands are kind of in some of these draws that come down through there. But if you look at it, we do have some highly erodible land up there. And we looked at this paper from Pike. There's different ways of doing this, but you know, sediment movement often occurs through concentrated flow erosion, and grass waterways might be one practice you could use to control that. And so here's an equation scale between 0 and 1, just based on some basic terrain parameters that you can calculate off of the DEM by processing the DEM. And then you cut off that 0 to 1 scale at some point. We used 0.7 and came up with this map showing where we've got some risk of concentrated flow erosion up there. And so you might be able to use that then if you're going to put in these wetlands to manage the risk of erosion up in these areas. So basically you've got erosion control as a priority up here, opportunities for wetlands, and then other practices perhaps down here. So it's a different way of kind of looking at the distribution and targeting and conservation practices across this watershed. So in conclusion, LIDAR data help to identify these sites for wetlands and two-stage ditches. The field review is absolutely critical to the success of it. It did identify one site that we felt was not appropriate for a wetland, and so we needed to go out and assure ourselves of that these sites were, that we ended up recommending were all appropriate. It does look like the HUC-12 scale is appropriate to develop these tools. That's something to keep in mind, and it's also quite compatible with a Mississippi River Basin Initiative planning program that they've put in place. Wetlands could intercept drainage from about 30% of the watershed area and occupy only about 1% of the contributing area, or 4% including buffers. And then the two-stage ditches might provide an added 4.5 hectares of riparian zone, and we are undertaking some effort to model the impact of these practices if they were installed on nutrient loss from the watershed.
Questions?
Yes.
Yeah, Mark, that's excellent. You've also got hydrologic retention that you haven't counted as an opportunity there as well. I would like to mention that Minnesota is also getting statewide LIDAR, and we're trying to collect conservation applications of LIDAR. So if anybody has those, if you would see me in the break, I would appreciate it, and we'll put those up on a website for everybody to get at.
Yes.
Hi, Mark. Do the farmers have concerns about
if the soils are wet for an extended period, that they fall under the federal guidelines for being a wetland, whether they can get those the ditches maintained or those areas maintained without some ramification.
Yeah, there would be concern about some of that, and I believe a lot of these soils in these areas are hydric, so they're considered farmed wetlands anyway, so they can't improve the drainage. One of the trade-offs we're thinking about, and certainly in Iowa there's a program looking at this, if you improve the drainage on some farmed wetlands and improve the drainage capacity, you can might be able to use some of these nutrient interception wetlands to mitigate that drainage of the wetland. You end up with better nutrient removal and some ecological benefit as well.
Why did you choose 30% to intercept the drainage from 30%? What I remember from the beginning was that the EPA was looking for like 40%.
Yeah, 45%, and that's basically the drainage area where we have the ability to put these wetlands in. We can't put wetlands everywhere, we know that. So where is it most feasible? And this is a scoping tool to look at that. We've done this in a few areas, and you can't actually put in a wetland down every drainage. Some of them are very narrow, and if you put it in an impoundment there, all you're going to end up with is a little pond. The wetland will be too small, or it will be way too big. You're going to end up diluting your program dollars or putting in something that doesn't necessarily get you your nutrient removal. So in some of those areas, we need to look at some other practices. That's some of the things we're trying to get across with this, that there are places that it's best to put these in, places where it may be less efficient to put it in, and then places where they're probably not appropriate at all. If you were to put wetlands in at the bottom of this wetland, or in the bottom of this watershed, if you were to find an area and force that to be in there, you'd probably take 30 or 40% of the cropland out of production, and you can't do that.
So do you collect samples before and after the constructed wetland just to get a picture of what kind of reduction that you're getting?
You're
going to assume...
Yeah, in Iowa... Yeah, that's right. In terms of the percentage, 1 or 2% of the wetland, that's based on some work that Bill Crumpton has done with the CREP program in Iowa, and he's got a very nice curve looking at hydraulic loading rate that comes through the wetland, and that's a function of the contributing area to ratio to the wetland area. And so the higher higher your hydraulic loading, of course, the less you've got in terms of nutrient removal efficiency. And he's come up with that 1 to 2% area. It gives you your optimum efficiency. If you go larger than that, you can get up 90% plus, but then you've spent more money putting those in. You're basically, you have to buy this land from these guys. It's $6,000 an acre.
All right. Thank you very much.